And we're talking tonight with Jim Vieira about his work as a writer, researcher, and a stonemason, ancient cultures and civilizations. More to come. Atlantis in your calls when we come right back. Welcome back, Jim Vieira, with us. Your calls as well. Jim, you mentioned Atlantis last hour.
Yes.
You kind of caught me. And tell me your interest there, and what do you think?
When I was young,
So old now, right?
I am. I'm wicked old. I'm 46.
Oh, yes.
So when I was young, I had this vision. You know, I'm a pretty dense individual, and I just had this lifelike vision of Atlantis underwater, and it just stuck with me. And I think I asked my dad, like, did I watch a television show about that? And he said no. And then I started, you know, I just kind of resonated with me. And I have a friend of mine who's a reverend, and he studied Edgar Cayce also. And I started to read all Cayce stuff and all this material when I was like a teenager. And it just kind of resonated with me. It's something that stuck with me. And an interesting turn when I was studying or researching giant skeletons, I kept finding in the secret or the texts of the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons, giant skeleton reports, and they tied in right along with the New York Times report or these other reports of giant skeletons, that their belief that it goes back to Atlantis, that it was proof of beings from Atlantis. That's what the Freemasons and Rosicrucians are saying. And Manly Palmer Hall's Encyclopedia of Esoteric Knowledge, I think 1918, one of his main quotes is that the Freemasons' belief that the mounds of ancient America, Stonehenge, the mounds of Normandy, the pyramids of Egypt, and the pyramids of South and Central America are all built by the ancestors of the Atlanteans, which I find interesting because you find giant skeletons at all those places, and you find the same geometry and mathematics. Flanders Petrie, the Egyptologist, unearthed giant skeletons in Egypt and wrote about it. I have an account of that. And Stonehenge, I told you about those giant skeletal remains. Pumapunku down there, you know Brian Forrester, the work they're doing there with Klaus Donner. So I think that's the larger picture. I think we're talking about possibly genetic engineering, but a lost civilization that these giants originate from. And Cayce has two separate quotes about giant skeletons, about giant beings from 7 to 12 feet tall.
What do you think happened to Atlantis?
I think it was destroyed in a cataclysm. You know,
from within or natural.
What Cayce talks about is that there were two factions, which is very interesting: the sons of Belial or Baal, as you have in the Bible, and the sons of Light, the Law of One, the people that have come back again, you know, and reincarnated again to create a better world. And there was this internal conflict, and the sons of darkness, essentially, Cayce says, used technology for mischievous purposes, for the ancient wars with Athens that the historians talk about, to conquer and to do vile things, and genetic experimentation, like the creation of Bigfoot and other things, as beasts of burden who are entrapped in those bodies. And that's interesting. They talk about, you know, like the lamas in Tibet, their texts talk about the Yeti as a real thing, and the Native Americans talk about it as a real creature that has intellect. It's not just like some hairy beast. So, you know, essentially, Cayce says at Baalbek, Lebanon, the sons of darkness went and built the Trilithon there. And it's funny because that's like a negative vortex. It was a temple of debauchery for the Romans, the Phoenicians, and I think it's like a headquarters for Hamas now. It's like a negative vibe at this place. But, you know, you have two factions, and I think the society tore itself apart, quite honestly.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Golden Valley, Minnesota. John is with us to get things going. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was just wondering if Jim knows if they had any giants in either Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, or South Dakota.
Yes, and yes. Absolutely. Definitely Minnesota, the burial mounds there. I have an account of 20 skeletons, 7 to 8 foot tall, all with double rows of teeth. I think it's the Minneapolis. If you go to my Facebook page, I have a bunch of accounts there, and I'm putting more up all the time. And if you shoot me a message, I can send you the specific accounts I'm talking about. But one thing about the Minnesota 20 Skeleton account is they all had curiously wrought bowls with strange hieroglyphs on them. Another thing you find over and over again is strange hieroglyphs, strange markings. The Bat Creek stone from the Tennessee mound that the Smithsonian unearthed has strange writing on it, the Grave Creek mound. And a lot of tablets were considered, it's funny, why do only the troublesome artifacts get called hoaxes? Especially when they have other versions that exist out there. So you have evidence that there was some kind of a language that went, you know, that existed in ancient America also. But there are a lot of burial mounds and giant skeletons, you know, in those sections you talked about, no question about it. You should check out Aztalan in Wisconsin, the ceremonial complex there. It's amazing.
Back we go. More calls. Let's go to Gordon in Oil City, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gordon. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here.
You've been there waiting for a while.
First time caller, and I've been listening to your show since 98.
Well, thank you.
And I say hello to George and Jim. But here's what I want to bring. It's probably not really what we were talking about tonight. Is this going to be okay?
Those are open lines. What do you got?
About the way Obama's treating the shootings.
We'll wait until open lines on that. Friday? Of course, this Friday, we're going to have, poor guy, he waited an hour, too. We've got the Mayan calendar, end of the world show. So we're not going to have time for open lines like that. Oh, well. Let's go to Melissa, Georgetown, New York. Hi, Melissa. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Oh, guys, so good to talk to you. I got a few things. I'll be quick. First of all, you know, I called once before about those red-winged blackbirds in Arkansas that, you know, is it suddenly...
The ones that all fell dead, right?
Well, that happened a second time on New Year's Eve last year,
that,
too.
They did. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was that cannon fireworks stuff. But also... you know, I think Coast to Coast listeners are like mostly nocturnal type people.
And they're PhDs. They're geniuses.
and also, I live off the grid. I've lived off the grid for 30 years, so I don't have the internet. But I think you could have like a dating service for Coast to Coast people to hook people up.
Nah, too much liability.
Okay. Well, now listen, I wanted to ask Jim. Jim, you're great. And that girl from Colorado Springs, she was wild. But anyway,
almost as much as you are.
Coral Castle, you know, my lower back is ruined too, but because I love rocks. But figure out how he
moved those stones.
Rocks.
You know about Coral Castle, Jimmy?
Yes, Edley Scallon.
Yeah.
He Douglas James Cottrell does a reading on Edley Scallon and talks about how he. Used an anti-gravity device. There's a picture of the...
It's like a magnetic thing, isn't it?
Exactly. It's, you know, gravity is, I believe it's 10, 12 hertz. The notion is that you disrupt gravity from above. And, you know, 154 feet into the up high on the Great Pyramid, you have 70-ton blocks of granite that are expertly joined. When the Egyptologists talk about limestone... You know, I mean, talk about the pyramids. They show the guys in loincloths, you know, hitting limestone. How do you get 70-ton stones 140 feet, you know, 5 feet in the air? I think there's a lost technology. Like, I'll quickly say David Hatcher Childress in his anti-gravity book talks about German soldiers, and they have pictures of it, going to the Himalayas and having a bunch of llamas sit around with those long tubes, those long horns, and levitating stones to build the Himalayan towers. I really feel that there is a technology that is being, you know, once again rediscovered in laboratories in its infantile stages right now that is not as complex as we think. I think he talked about his quote, Edley Scallion, was that he refound the technology that they used to build the pyramids with, and he definitely used something to disrupt gravity. You know, a 350-ton door that you swivel with one hand, and they had to reset it, and now it doesn't work as well as he did it. They use some skinny, like, 5'5" dude, you know, working at night. So, absolutely, I believe that Coral Castle was built with anti-gravity means. It is amazing. It's, you know, Have an archaeologist describe that one to you.
Well, that's a good point, too. I mean, he was working all by himself. Nobody helped him.
Absolutely. You know, he said it himself. You know, it's just it was very odd. He was very strange. His girlfriend broke his heart, or his wife, and he built it as a shrine to her. And he's a very reclusive and strange guy, but he definitely, I believe, used anti-gravity means to build it. And if you don't know about Coral Castle, Google that. It's an amazing place.
It sure is. Okay, let's go to Jersey City, New Jersey. Gene's with us. Gene, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I'm as a Catholic Christian, I'm wondering, what does the Vatican have anything to say about this stuff? That anti-gravity stuff, that sounds pretty good, but some of this other double teeth and all that crap, it sounds like something from the Father of Lies. You know who the Father of Lies is. Anything out of the Vatican about all this nut and butter?
Well, I'll just say that the anatomic anomaly of double rows of teeth occurs over decades and decades of time and thousands of miles, and you have you know, people from all walks of life just describing what they see in front of them. So it seems to me that it's a phenomenon that exists. So I don't think it's conjured in anybody's particular mind, because they didn't have the internet from 1840, you know, to 1940. It's all these reports. You know, I'll say the Vatican, I don't know if there's any connections. Actually, that's like a Steve Quayle question, I would think. He's knowledgeable about such things. I would just say that I'm sure they're involved in suppression of historical evidence. In fact, there's no question they are. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were involved in this also. I mean, you know, the butler comes out and gets 18 months in jail, and the Vatican, you know, has revealed all these, like, sexual crimes. And what do they get? Nothing, you know? I was watching a PBS special about Martin Luther, and he eviscerates the church in his writings. It's amazing. He travels to the Vatican in the 1500s trying to seek God. He gets there, and Pope Leo is having, like, boar hunts and banquets every night with young naked boys jumping out of cakes. And so it's such reprehensible behavior that hasn't changed in all these years. You know, the Vatican, you know, like I said, I'm a recovering Catholic, and I, you know, believe that the Vatican is a real seat of evil on the planet, quite honestly.
Don't hold back, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Let's go to Xander in Manhattan in New York. Hey, Xander, go ahead.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Good, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the basis of the ancient relics you guys were talking about earlier.
Okay.
And I wanted to know, okay, I was asking the gentleman about the Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what really gets me concerned, but then I'm going to get to the 2012 thing and the end of the world, because I feel as if, you know, they're still looking for the city of Atlantis. Now, I was watching National Geographic about a couple of months ago, and I noticed they found certain pieces that were off the coast of Crete. Is it possible that they found a lost civilization in Atlantis? Because I'm still thinking about it after watching it. I'm not 100% sure.
I would say, and I believe, and Edgar Casey talked about it also, that Atlantis is under 40 million square miles of ocean in the Atlantic, and it's stretched into the Caribbean. And what you have is you have recreations of Atlantis. It's funny. If you look at the old Plato's map of Atlantis in the central city, Edgar Casey says that the Atlantean ancestors that were part of the culture that built the mounds of America, they built ceremonial mounds that look like the central city of Atlantis. And in Portsmouth, Ohio, Squire and Davis from the Smithsonian mapped basically the central city of Atlantis. It's in Greg Little's book. It's amazing. And you have Carthage the city of Carthage in the center looked like Atlantis. So you have these remnants of the civilization, but I think the civilization itself is under the Atlantic, and there's ruins to be found around Bimini. There's the work of Paula Zielinski and in Cuba, 2,000 feet down.
What's going on with those structures?
That story's gone away so fast, it's pathetic. And she got kidnapped in Mexico.
Kidnapped.
Do you know that story?
I almost got kidnapped in Mexico.
She got kidnapped and ransomed. I don't know if it was for a separate matter, but it's a wild story. And, you would figure, I mean, she's a real, like, you know, she's not a quack at all. She's like an official, you know, researcher. And they're definitely down there, and there are more structures down there. Like Graham Hancock is a big proponent of searching the oceans of the world. You know, his old Underworld series is amazing. And, you know, Dwarka and off the coast of India, even off the coast of the United States. I think they found a mound off the coast of South Carolina that Greg Little talks about. But there are clues to the past to be found, because over 10,000 years ago, the sea levels rose 400 feet in a cataclysmic event. I'm sure, you know, the Casey sinking of Atlantis or something. And we have evidence buried or underwater all around the planet, like Yonaguni, you know, just happens to sit on the, you know, the solstice line, you know. Is that an accident or is it a natural formation, right?
Good point. Let's go next to Ogden, Utah. Alan's with us west of the Rockies. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, George. Hello,
sure.
Jim.
Hi.
Wanted to let you know, when I actually saw a mummy of a red-haired giant when I was around 10 years old in a little museum in Lovelock, Nevada. And it was not a skeleton, it was a mummy. It was dressed in kind of rough-looking clothing, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to that. Had a very big head, really quite hideous, although the skin was very desiccated and leather-like, but it was kind of caved in, could see the teeth. The hands were very well preserved. And they were just like, you know, normal human hands, except huge.
And was it the Humboldt Museum or the Winnemucca? Do you know which museum it was?
It's probably Winnemucca, yeah. I believe it was Winnemucca.
That's funny. Because, they have the skulls in the back room there.
Oh, do they?
And Barbara Powell from the museum sent an email to Terry Dahl, a researcher, that, yes, we have the skulls. And there's a History Channel special that shows David handling those skulls. So they had a mummy on display.
Yeah, this is probably 8 or 9 feet tall. And I understand from stuff I read on the Internet that it disappeared back in the 90s at some point, and at least the information on the Internet said no one knows what became of it. But I was wondering if you thought that had been sent to the Smithsonian.
I read the account earlier in the show to George, and I have it, that it was 9.5 feet mummy that was sent to the Smithsonian. I don't know if that's a separate case, but I you know, have an account that exactly what you're describing, which is amazing, right here.
And they buried the story, literally.
Yes, it's Lovelock, Nevada, 9.5 feet. Nevada State Journal, October 3rd, 1936, page 12. 9.5 feet. The mummy is now at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C.
That's the one you've been talking about all night, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Wow, I've heard stories like this, believe me.
But you know, there it is in black and white. We're coming back. Final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, crypto hunter John Rhodes joins us as we talk about lizard people. Yes, we will. We're going to come back in just a moment with Jim Vieira as we talk about structures and past civilizations and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are, Jim Vieira. We're going to take your calls. Jim, of everything you've investigated beyond Atlantis, what fascinates you? With a heavy sigh.
Well, quite honestly, the amazing, inexplicable stone ruins all around the planet. It's not like, you know, there's one East, you know, there's Easter Island and that's it. The entire globe is filled with unexplained stone structures. It's amazing. And what's more amazing is that it's not chalked up to some advanced civilization. It's just like, you know, the professional's feet aren't put to the fire. I'm like, are you out of your mind? You know, do you know what a 350-ton piece of granite in a wall of Sacsayhuaman is like to place there? It's like, I don't know, when Dr. Robert Schock redated the Sphinx over 8,000 years old due to weathering of water.
And it was a brilliant theory, I think.
And all the geologists uniformly agree with it, but no archaeologist agrees with it. It's like this idea of not being able to admit you're wrong. You know, the Clovis Barrier is total science fiction and has been obliterated. You know, where's the apology letter? How about let's review some other theories? I just feel like as a stonemason, I just love stone, and I think it's like a living material. and at places like all around the globe. It's just so inspiring to just to look at Stonehenge and to realize what it took to build, you know, to bring those bluestones 180 miles to that site. And that to me, I think, is the most interesting and inspiring topic that I get into.
Okay, let's go now to Jesse in Shasta County. That's a jail, by the way, prison. Hey, Jesse, how are you?
Good evening, George Noy. This is Jesse James King giving you a shout-out from the Shasta County Jail.
Super. You're a guard or an inmate?
No, I'm a convict, absolutely, behind the walls.
How'd you get to a phone?
Well, I'm in the segregated unit, and they don't have the side of our cell but 1 hour a day. So
all right.
They got to give us a phone and pass it around inside the cell to record us here.
Okay, well, you're on. Go ahead, Jess.
All right, thank you. We listen to Coast on a regular, and I've been listening to you guys for a long, long time, and I don't want to get off the subject. I know you were talking about Atlantis and all that, but before y'all talking about was Giants and stuff.
Yep.
Now, okay, look. There's giants among us today that a lot of people don't get a lot of recognition for, like Shaq. He's 7 feet tall. Andre the Giant, the famous wrestler, he was almost 8 feet tall. Mm-hmm. The biggest person in the world today, I think, that's got the world record, is he's a Mongolian. He's like 9.5, 10 feet tall, I think, right? And I hear you talking about these giants as if, you know, that's it. They're all gone. Now, I do know you talked about they was have red hair and double rows of teeth and all that. And, you know, there ain't none of that going on right now, but I kind of like to get an idea of what you think about the giants that are among us today, and that maybe there's a genetic connection with that.
All yes, right. I'm going to put you on hold. And Jesse, what are you in for, by the way?
Well, right now I'm fighting an attempted escape case here in the county jail.
Attempted escape?
Yeah, I was in on a vandalism for breaking a window, and then you know, I was in another unit here in the cell house, and so attempted escape went down, and they linked me with it. I'm not saying I did it. And I'm not saying I didn't do it. I'm saying I'm in the hole for that. That's
I know. How long you been in prison overall?
Well, on this stretch, I got about 6.5 months in. My previous stretch was, I did from 15 to 26, 11 years.
What'd you do to get in there for that?
When I was 15, I was a drug dealer on the streets of Seattle. And selling little bags of marijuana back in the day. You know, you think about it now, marijuana is legal in Washington State.
I know it is.
Yes. And 1994, I was selling little dime bags of weed, and I got caught up with a guy, and he tried to rob me and get the weed that I had from me and not pay me, so I kind of turned the tables on him and shot him a couple of times, and they gave me 11 years for it.
Did you kill him?
No. He pulled a gun on me. Washington State doesn't have much of a self-defense law.
Hey, do you guys, and we're going to get to Jim in a second. I mean, you guys heard about the tragedy in Connecticut, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What do you guys talk about when you hear a story like that?
Well, that's a horrible event. I'm a gun supporter. I might be a convicted felon, but I'm a gun supporter. I believe that everybody should have the right to bear arms to defend yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Me too.
That individual, he wasn't all there in his mind. He wasn't right. And the fact that he had access to a weapon, that's all bad. The fact that he had access to a weapon, was able to do those horrible things to those kids, is all bad.
Well, they were his mother's weapons, and he killed her.
Yeah, that's
a horrible story. Anyways, Jim, horrible. Go ahead. You want to react to Jesse's question?
I'll say, yeah, I wish the call luck. He sounds intellectually together, and you know, hopefully he can move forward positively in life. I wish the best for him. Well, I want to say all your callers, I want to commend them all. They've all had great questions, and you have a very knowledgeable audience. You know, I'll say that absolutely there are remnants of giants. Steve Quayle has some really good pictures, like National Geographic ones of massive Afghanis standing next to regular citizens.
He had a story for us once when he was on with me about a giant that they found in a cave. It was alive.
Yeah, I know. I've heard. Yeah, you know,
with the remnants of soldiers around him that he had been eating.
There's some wild. He's great. I love his stuff. So there is some. There are remnants, absolutely. And like I said, double rows of teeth still exists in the genetic record. I just think, you know, it's a good question. You know, why is it that there are less? You know, is it strictly a matter of a kind of a different genetic race that kind of died out in the population? You know, they were like the kings and queens of certain populations, or the warriors and the chiefs. But then again, it seems like that call was great with the 9.5-foot mummy from Lovelock. We've been talking about it all night. It's like, so I'm the crazy guy, you know, and then this call comes in like, yeah, I saw the 9-foot mummy.
I wouldn't call you crazy.
But, you know, that somehow when you talk about this subject, it's off-putting to a professional. And it's like, you know, really, I'll make this point. You know, you can theorize about this stuff, but it has never, ever been properly explained by a professional how you can get thousands of these accounts through decades and decades of time, oftentimes from the leading scientists, archaeologists, and anthropologists of the day. How did they make their way into the Scientific American Antiquarian, the Smithsonian's own reports, the New York Times headlines, you know, dozens of them, and town and county histories all around the country? That is the one question I want answered, and it's never been answered. And instead, it's like it's all this tangential nonsense. Where are the skeletons? Or, you know, not directly answering the question.
Jimmy, let me ask you about Photoshop. How do we know some of these great pictures we see aren't part of that?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, that the majority of that is all fake. That the underwater skeletons, the 20-foot skeleton in India, that is in my estimation, it's like Roswell, where first it was a weather balloon, right, and then it was parachute dummies. It's like they have levels of, smoke screens that they put out there. And it seems a couple of years ago, maybe they understood that the story is going to start to gain momentum. And I think, you know, 120,000 views on my YouTube video, my TEDx video shows that people have an interest in that. And I think that's part of a smoke screen. Like people get off the line. They're like, oh, this is so interesting. Let me go on the computer. And they'll go and they'll see a bunch of Photoshopped hoaxes, and they'll say, you know, it's being portrayed in a hoaxish, ridiculous light, rather than real researchers are pointing to historical documents, showing actual photographs and accounts. And, you know, I think most of that stuff is like Photoshopped hoaxes on the internet, frankly.
Well, let's go to Al, Roanoke, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Al.
Hey, good morning, guys. I've been listening to you on my cell phone. I get it better than the radio. First off, I started going to school at Trinity in Dublin and studied anthropology. And you talk about stone artifacts. There is a line of standing stones that go 1,800 miles. And when GPS came around, they GPSed them all. And they were no more than, you know, inches out of a line. And how do you get a line 1,800 miles long in the Stone Age? And there was also another mound that was, as you know, four times bigger than a football field. And when they excavated, it was ringed with different types of quartz. And to my mind, I started out as an electrical engineer. That was an electrical device. That was a mechanism. That wasn't a burial site. And the guy who ran the place, when I talked to him privately, he agreed. But the thing, the tour guy always, oh, this was a burial mound. But no, this was a device. And Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex. The thing he left out should be known as the military-industrial educational complex. I spent 25 years in academia, and I made myself into a psychosocial cultural anthropologist, because you had to understand all of those things to understand any one of them. And I just kept seeing people unearthing really great truth, and the institutions would say, oh, no, you can't talk about that. I was at NYU, and a man kind of was looking at the Mayan calendar in the 70s. He was a computer scientist, and he said, this is a Fourier transfer, meaning it was a computer program. And I just kept stumbling across things of this nature. And because I wasn't really looking to be a tenured professor, I was just enjoying doing research, I was left to look at these things. But anytime I wanted to teach about it or talk about it or say anything about it, no.
Yeah,
the worst experience I had was there's a place called Bedford, Virginia, and they were building a Walmart. And there's a law in Virginia, because there's so much history here, especially Civil War history, that if you come across anything Indian or Civil War, you got to stop building. Well, they came across not only a Civil War hospital, but a Cherokee burial ground. and the contractor, Tech was told about it, and in the 2 days it took Tech to get there, the contractor bulldozed everything and buried it.
Absolutely, yep. That still happens. I've talked to farmers in Deerfield who have unearthed giant skeletons and destroyed them or reburied them because they didn't want 300 acres cordoned off. And yeah, it's a crime.
It really is. Let's take a few more calls before we're out of time, Jim. Go ahead. You want to wrap up here?
No, I was going to say that was a great call, and he was correctly stating that these mounds are not always what you think, that they're built in inorganic and organic layers of materials to be maybe transducers of energy. There's definitely something to what he was saying.
Let's go to Phoenix. Robert's with us, first-time caller. Robert, go ahead.
George, how you doing?
Good, Rob.
First time calling. My friend in Chandler got me hooked up with you guys years back, and it's been an enjoyable show. My question is to Jim, that's very, very knowledgeable in his field. What does he think? I'm going up the pace in a few days, but what does he think about this Maya calendar, and what's his overview of what may and may not happen? I mean, I don't believe in the end of the world, but I think something may happen. I just don't know what. What's his outlook on it?
Yeah, no, I believe it's the end of a cycle, 25,920 years. The precession of the equinox, knowledge of it, is embedded in mythology all around the globe. Scintilla, the MIT professor of history, wrote this amazing book, Hamlet's Mill, and he talks about, the Norse, the Odyssey, all these embedded mathematical codes that showed they knew precession all around the planet. And I think it was knowledge from a lost civilization pointing to this event, not a date, not a day, but a transition that's happening, the awakening of humanity that's happening all around the globe. But I think the old system is dying. It's getting more reckless. And, that over the next 6 or 7 years, I think things could get a little hairy. But I am fully confident that we are emerging into a world of light that we can't envision right now, that will astound our generations to come. And it sounds like, kind of wishful thinking or utopian. I really feel that's going to happen. And I feel that we all share one holographic mind. And the more people that wake up to that reality and act in ways of kindness and respect for all life, it resonates and changes everything. And I really think that's what's happening now.
We need more of that, Jim.
Yes, I think it's really happening.
Let's take Leif in Sutton's Bay, Michigan. Go ahead, Leif.
Hello?
Yeah, hi there.
Hi. I'm just listening to your topic about the mounds and the giants. And I study history quite often, and I get these books represent my area up here. Just old historians and postcards and things. And I found this book where this kind of a reputable author was writing about this county that I live in, which is kind of a distinctive county where there's the Sleeping Bear Dunes and there's lots of Native American history here.
Mm-hmm.
And this book talks about these really distinctive mounds that are along the shore of Lake Michigan, right by the Manitou Islands. And this author, this was back in like the 30s or 40s, or I don't have the book in front of me right now, but he was
way ahead of his time.
The question that he was thinking that these mounds were Native American mounds, and I'm just wondering, is there any history about Native American mounds in along Lake Michigan?
Oh, absolutely. The Michigan mounds, there's lots of mounds there. There's, in fact, I think around 5,000 B.C. in Isle Royal, Upper Peninsula, they started mining copper out of the Upper Peninsula. 5,000 B.C., between, what is the figure? I think it's 500 million to 1.5 billion pounds of copper were mined out of those mines. An amazing story that nobody's really heard of. And scientists and engineers estimated that it took 10,000 men 1,000 years to mine that copper. And there's lots of evidence, mine shafts and tools. It's an amazing story. And absolutely, there's many giants in the mountain that came out of the mountains of Michigan, and very strange artifacts too. A lot of written language stuff. Henrietta Mertz, The Secret Mark of the Mound Builders is an excellent book about the Michigan artifacts that came out.
Jimmy, how many followers on Facebook?
Oh, I'm not sure yet. I just put up my page like 3 or 4 weeks ago. So it's starting to I've been doing a series of radio interviews, and after the TEDx talk, it's exponentially growing. I've been talking with John Haskell, who Hidden Mystery Revealed, I think, and he's working with the History Channel. They have a show December 21st about stone ruins in Georgia. I think it's the Richard Thornton site that he thought the Mayans might have built it. But we've been talking about getting together, and I really think that this subject would be very interesting in a History Channel special. I keep telling Hugh Newman, he's been on Ancient Aliens, and Ross Hamilton, we've been working together on this whole research thing. I just think people find it so compelling, and I think there's a lot of evidence. It's not like a couple scraps and they keep you coming back for more. There is an overwhelming body of evidence. And I really think and would hope that the History Channel would pick up the subject.
Well, it tells you that something very strange happened a very long time ago on this planet, huh?
That's for sure. And you know what it is? Other people who study anomalies and are ridiculed for, like, believing in extraterrestrials or Bigfoot, and there's plenty of evidence for it, but not like the body of evidence for this whole giant phenomena. There's so much evidence that it really strengthens the resolve of other people to take on a corrupt system that doesn't want to study anomalies and tell people they're crazy for seeing what they see in front of their eyes. That, to me, is the
Absolutely.
Most insulting thing.
Well, Jimmy, good job, and thanks again. You're always welcome back here on Coast to Coast. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.